listening to All the Best. I'm Michael Bryden. Every year around this time, I start to get the same feeling. And you know the one. Everyone around you started going out more and wearing less. There's boys running shirtless through parks and girls on the beach in bikinis. And then there's me with my little winter pot belly. And every year I have the same thought. You should go to the gym. People go to the gym for a whole bunch of different reasons. To get fit, to catch up with friends, to get a kick out of the endorphins, or because you bought a membership 6 months ago and it was so expensive that you've been kind of guilted into it. But this week on All the Best, Lachie Moorhead is going to introduce us to a bunch of people for who, well, the gym's a pretty big part of what's keeping them alive. This story was adapted from a piece that Lachie wrote for Star News Group in March called Drugs Cold Grip, and we'll put a link up to the piece at allthebestradio.com.
That's absolute best.
Most of you said before that the easiest thing was the hardest thing to write, so tell me about the easiest thing.
Yeah, so the easiest thing for me was, because I had a lot of support, like with Glenn, and then pushing me to do the Master Challenge, the easiest thing for me was stopping gear. Easy, that was by far the easiest.
Because of the support you had.
Yeah. And then you came to a point that if you kept going. Mm.
I think even alcohol was harder than stopping gear. So.
Really?
Yeah.
And you've been smoke-free now for how long?
Cigarettes.
Cigarettes.
12 weeks and 3 days.
Fuck yeah.
Shit, man.
I wish I was smoke-free.
Yeah, same.
I'm almost there. I'm put a ban on myself smoking outside of my house.
It's a good start.
Not that I smoke in the house, but I mean like on the veranda. You know what I mean?
See, that would be enough at the moment for me to stop just going outside to smoke. I'd be like, no, it's too cold. It's too cold.
Especially where I live.
Nothing was easy.
Nothing was easy?
No. Same with me.
Yep.
These guys are from the Youth U Mentoring Program. They're all in their teens to late 20s, battling drug addiction, and most feel they have nowhere left to turn. We're sitting around a table at a warehouse in Hallam, in Melbourne's southeast, and they're checking in with each other. Every one of them is resolved to get their life back on track. This is Reed.
That happened, then we moved down this way, and I hit 14, and I started smoking marijuana, and then I got in trouble at school. I got expelled from there. Halfway through my year 10.
Why?
Just fighting, drugs, a bit of everything. And once 14, 15 hit, I started snorting speed and I started smoking ice. And
when did you start doing ice?
When I was about 16.
Okay.
So I hit ice when I was about 16, and before that I was just, spending all my nights on the street.
When did you start taking drugs? How old were you?
About 14.
Yeah.
I started smoking marijuana and
then it progressed to...
Yeah, it progressed to speed and then ecstasy or pills just every now and then, and then drinking all the time, and I was, wasn't in the right mind state. I was hanging with the wrong people, I suppose, and spending all my nights on the street.
Like many at the gym, Reed reached a breaking point, the cliched rock bottom.
I honestly thought I was... If I kept going, I was in it. Because I was around the bad people. I'd been broke a bit of my cheekbone.
What was that, over drug disputes?
Yeah, just over stupid shit, I suppose. And I one day I was smoking pipes and I said to everyone, I don't want to do this anymore. And it was the last time I touched the ice and I smashed my pipe, and I've never gone back to it again. I've been clean off everything for about 2 years now. Just over 2 years, so I have not touched.
And Reed's working hard at Youth U with the help of his peers and mentors. One of them is Glenn Munso, who founded the program last year. He's 28 and a former drug dealer and addict himself. Now he's a personal trainer and runs the gym out of the warehouse.
Quite a good perspective on it. How bad is the drug problem in Casey?
Yeah,
around here.
It's actually getting worse.
Yeah.
Last year, I've got kids coming in that are 13. It's getting really, really bad. You know, when I didn't touch the harder stuff, ice and all that, until it was about 2019. Like, I didn't even know what a crack pipe was till then. Mm. But now, on the phone with parents and having kids in the program, there's 13-year-olds using it.
Using ice?
Yeah, there's a massive, massive...
So you've had 13-year-old kids come in here?
I have 13-year-old kids on my program.
That have been using ice?
Yes. Yeah. It's like, no shit, fucking... Like, you just like...
I'm sitting with Glenn inside the gym on a rainy afternoon, talking about his history.
And obviously on the week, because I took it so seriously on the weekend, I used to hang around with a lot of drug dealers.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'd be like, you know, have some ice, da-da-da. And
yeah.
I'd dip into it, but I'd be like, and if I dip onto it, I'm going to be up and I won't be able to deal.
So you always had in the back of your head, I've got to deal and I guess stay professional.
It was a full-time job.
It's a full-time job. So
it was all or nothing.
Run me through, so full-time job, so what, you're doing it every day?
Yeah.
For what, 8 hours a day or?
Yeah, even longer.
Really?
Yeah.
And so you're making a lot of money?
Yeah.
And what's
so that? I was spending about $5,500 a week.
So you were earning about $5,500, how much were you earning a week?
Enough for that to come back.
Yeah.
So I definitely made that back, plus profit, plus a couple of grand profit on top.
Okay,
So if I was spending like $5,500, I'd make about $8,500.
Okay, and you were spending $5,000 on drugs.
Yeah.
So you were making about $8,000, you're spending about $5,000 on drugs. Yeah, okay, wow. I guess when you're 20, 21, and you've got that type of money as well, that's a crazy amount of money. Like, that's, you know, that's, yes. Yeah, that, yeah, that's nuts, isn't yeah. it? Wow, yeah.
So I was just obviously back then just spending it. So it's not like I had anything really to show for it. Just shouted, you know.
Yeah, but, just spending it all. Yeah. Gee, that's.
But you know, like I tell these kids, like these kids, you know, they're spending about, you know, $200-$300 a week.
So that's
why I make them pay for it.
Yeah.
In 2008, Glenn was arrested for dealing pot and assaulting a police officer. He was sentenced to 1 month's jail. But on appeal, he served an 18-month intensive corrections order.
You know, I had, you know, drug counsellors, anger management, and stuff like that. But I found what was missing in that system was, you know, what was going to happen next, what was going to happen after you finished the order.
Yeah.
Everything was clinical. Everything was based on statistics and what they learnt textbook.
Mm.
So, you know, what I learnt was, you know, I learnt most of my lessons obviously being through that and also talking to the people that had been there and done that. So, you know, there was a lot of people, you know, I got put into a COG skills program, which is about 10 people from Dandenong Corrections.
What's it called?
COG skills.
COG skills, yeah.
Yep. And there was 10 people and they were a lot older, you know, in and out of jail. And, you know, I was the youngest there by far. And, you know, they were, you know, it was more like a mentoring thing, you know, don't stuff up, don't, you know, don't go back to this. This is what happens, and just showing me. You know,
Glenn founded the Youth U program based on what he learned. It currently caters for around 20 kids who take part in a weekly exercise class, followed by a mentoring session, and then extra gym classes 3 times a week. All the kids have Glenn's mobile number, and he's adamant they contact him anytime. They're always texting him. They've also set up a private Facebook group so everyone can chat with each other when they need to. I went down on a Saturday morning and watched the group train first. Music blares and each person runs through their own regime. They're guided by Glenn's notes on the whiteboard and his shout. Towards the end of the gym class, one of the guys starts doing step-ups on the bench next to me. Even though he has no idea who I am, he's warm and friendly and speaks to me about the drug ice. Language warning. Yeah.
25% of people jump on it and they fucking can't get off it. There's like a lucky 5% that fucking
vote to get yourself
in one of those 5% made up. My old boss, I went and told my boss I had a problem. And my boss paid for a private rehab. Coughed up like $15,000 out of his own pocket to send me to rehab. And I said, look, I'm fucked. You can help me. You can tell me to fuck off. You can punch me in the face or you can be my mate and ask him for help. And he said, mate, you got fucking balls, courage to come and ask me for this. It's fucking, nobody's ever asked me for this before. Well, I hope you're one of that 5% of balls.
He tells me his name's Sean and I introduce myself. Sean is 26 and knew Glenn back when they were both heavily into drugs. He has been fighting drug addiction for the last 11 years or so and recently reached out to Glenn. After an hour of training, tables are brought into the middle of the room and everyone takes a seat, along with Glenn and another mentor, Amy, who helps coach the session.
My teaching background's kind of in disengaged kids. I've worked with lots of DHS kids and young people that have lots of mental health issues, drug and alcohol issues, all sorts of things. So it's a big passion. So I'm just in talking to that, and he's like, oh, I really want to do this thing. He started up the program last year. It was okay, but he really wanted to make it awesome this year.
Yeah.
So I said, oh.
Amy is 28, the same as Glenn. She's known him for a couple of years through the gym and began helping with the program at the start of this year.
Enjoyed about it, or what's kept you in it?
Kept you having a go.
Yeah.
I think first of all it was really seeing that Glenn was really passionate about the youth kids, and I think that's what sparked me wanting to help him more, because he's not a teacher, and I thought that some of my skills as a teacher would really come in
handy. And it's clear just sitting in that session.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Trying to keep them all on track.
Yeah.
It's good also having a female in there, although most of them are boys. Probably the majority we get, 90% boys. But to have, if there is a girl, that female connection, I think is really handy. But also not just making it a boys' club.
Yeah.
So I think that's what really brought me to the program, and then meeting the kids and learning about their stories and seeing, you can really see the change from week to week. I didn't think that it would happen that quickly, but you can see their attitudes change and their habits change, and that was something that I don't necessarily get in a school. In a school, I'm not able to be part of their outside life. I'm not allowed to consult them on what's happening at home. I'm only allowed to talk about what's happening at school.
And here, this is their life. This is their outside life.
So I really enjoyed that part of it.
Do you get attached to these kids?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And it's really rewarding. Like, you know, I'm volunteering the program, but it's a different kind of reward than money can give you. It's rewarding to see, particularly Reid, who you were just talking to, his attitude. The only thing I can do is smoke weed and that's it. And he's really changed his attitude, which is, that's the kind of reward. Like, it's just different.
What about the flip side to that as well, Amy? When the kids relapse or go back, I mean, do you sort of take that as a personal sort of hit? And you try, I mean, obviously try not to, but...
Yeah, it is. It's really hard. And you just, you know, the kids go MIA for a few days and you just kind of hope and pray that they haven't...
Because you get attached to these
guys. Or back into
the
same habits. Yeah, definitely. And I think in working with the kids that I was with...
Glenn, Amy and the others let me sit in on the hour-long mentoring session. On this particular Saturday, each person is given an A3 sheet of paper with a number of different boxes. Each box has a question and a space below for everyone to write their answers. Questions like, what's the hardest thing you've gone through? The easiest thing? What have you passed on to others? One by one, the group share their answers.
You're so foolish. What a rat.
Glenn, what are you passing on to others? You're obviously passing a lot on to others.
Mine is to, what I want to pass on to others is that it is possible to achieve their goals. I think, you know, even for myself, a few times when I wanted to go out and achieve things, people would laugh at me, not take me seriously. So I always want to, you know, when someone tells me a goal, always, you know, who am I to take that away from them? So always, you know, show people and tell them, you know, no matter how big that goal is, it's, you know, it's up to you to make that happen, and that it is possible as well. So just, you know, I guess, yeah, show them that it is possible, and, you know, tell them that it is possible, and no matter what, you can actually achieve what you want to get.
Yeah, there's so many of those haters out there that are going to push you down. You would, and I know you've said this before, with your friend, the friends that you would have been with, the other people that were doing drugs, they would have been like, huh, you're hilarious trying to get off drugs, why would you do that? But part of it, I guess, for them would have come out of their insecurities.
Yeah.
In that, oh, now I'm a bit jealous because you're actually going to start and you're going to do this, and here I am still stuck in my drug-fueled rages and whatever.
Yeah, because that was even for me, like when I said, like all the stuff that happened, I said, I'm going to be a personal trainer. Everyone I said that laughed at me because they're like you're a dealer and you smoke, like, you know, you smoke heaps a day, and, you know, like, look at you, like, that's not gonna happen, you know, they'd laugh at you. You know, so even doing this program as well, a lot of people didn't you know, when people that I mentioned to, even, you know, when I was on my order, you know, people say, oh, that's cool, we all have dreams, yeah, you know, whatever, but it's just sort
that's
of fogged
nice.
Off.
Well
yeah.
done.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can, you know, for you guys anyway, you can achieve it, no matter what.
A few minutes later, the discussion shifts to another question. Everyone is asked about how far they feel they've come since starting the program.
In that time, you chose to come here.
Yeah, that's huge.
I think that step, yeah, that first step.
And that's massive. Yeah. Yeah. It says a lot about your character as well, so it's awesome. Yeah?
Where I was throwing every new opportunity away.
That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah. Is that what you're doing now?
I still do it sometimes, not in terms of it. You know, all the drugs sort of stuff, I'm past now.
Yeah.
But still sometimes, that's the one thing I'm still learning.
And that's all right?
I'm throwing opportunities away.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's just being lazy or it's just being, you know, not motivated all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just having your bad days.
Yep. Yep.
But it's something I'm learning and getting through.
Yeah.
That's great. Nice. Okay.
Where I was, homeless, addicted, lock up. Broken, lost.
Is that where you are now?
Nah, far from it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like really, really different.
That was Bianca. She's 25 and started smoking pot when she was just 12. She moved on to ecstasy and speed by the time she was 15. And at 19, she started taking ice. She was smoking it every day. After the mentoring session, Bianca stays behind to have a chat with me.
And then when I was 2.5 years ago, when I was 23, I moved myself to Darwin. Jumped on a one-way, I got a one-way ticket and I moved to Darwin.
So you left your family?
Left everything.
What was that?
I didn't like the direction my life was going. Mm-hmm. I got up there, I was clean for 3 months.
And so you were about 23, 22?
Yeah. And then I started using again pretty heavily.
Up there?
Yeah. I've been to places that I can't even describe. I've been kidnapped. I've been homeless. I've been locked up. I've been pretty much to the darkest place, the end of the darkest roads.
When she fled to Darwin, Bianca never told anyone she was leaving. She just disappeared.
Left everything. And she got in contact with Glenn while I was up there.
Did she know? Did you finally tell her that you're up there, or?
She found out, she just didn't know what was going on. I didn't have any bank accounts. I didn't have any form of income or anything like that. Nothing that could track me.
Without Glenn, Amy, and the Youth U program, Bianca is brutally honest about where she thinks she would have ended up. Now, she's got another chance.
Where do you think you'd be if not for Glenn and the UCU program?
I don't really know. I really don't know because, I mean, I'm a strong believer in you've got to want to do it for yourself. But Glenn gave me the tools and the knowledge of being able to pull myself out. So I don't know where I'd be without Glenn. Yeah, this program's amazing. It really is. Yeah.
I mean, considering everything you went through, if you hadn't been Glenn.
I reckon I'd be dead. Honestly, I reckon I'd be dead. Locked up.
During your journey, did you come close to death?
A couple of times, and I've no doubt that that death was the next card laid out for me. I'm a strong believer in, like, you reap what you sow, and you can't keep testing fate.
Through setting up the program, Glenn's found a purpose. It's something he's devoting his life to. He gives the men and the women in the group hope because he's been in their shoes and he survived. He pulled through.
Bad stuff.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to listen to anyone.
Yeah.
No matter how many times people told me, I had to actually go through it myself. Yeah.
Your family must be just so thankful and so happy in your recovery. I mean, did you speak to them about it, or?
Not really about my recovery. They obviously know what I'm doing, and they love it and stuff like that. I like to move forward. I still reflect on the past and stuff like that, and you know, everything that's happened to me is a blessing because otherwise I wouldn't be able to connect.
Yeah.
And I believe it happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And I tell these kids as well, as shit as it is and it gets, you use that as fuel because you're going to be able to help the next person.
Yeah.
To get in touch with Glenn, check out the Youth U Facebook page. For addiction support, contact the Youth Support Advocacy Service, YSAS, on 1800 458 685. Those in need of immediate assistance can phone Lifeline on 131114.
The documentary you've just listened to was produced by Lockie Moorhead and adapted from a story he wrote for Star News Group called Drugs Cold Grip. And we'll put a link up to the original story at allthebestradio.com. Supervising producer for the piece was Beck Fari. If you missed the start or you want to listen again, head to allthebestradio.com where you can also find past stories and subscribe to our podcast. All the Best is produced at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with Triple R and SYN in Melbourne and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. Our features executive producer is Heidi Pett. Our community coordinator is Aidan Mullins. Our state coordinators are Sky Kirkham and Beth AQ. And our SYN production manager is Beck Fari. My co-host is Pip Rasmussen and I'm Michael Bryden. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
Gold sky above me.